Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Big Cat Banter Podcast, the flagship Florida Panthers podcast of the Hockey Writers. I am Colby Guy, and I'm here with Joey Ganzi. You want to say hi?
Of course I do. Welcome aboard, guys. Very happy to be here. And boy, do we have a lot of happiness to talk about.
Yeah, the two official founders of the Sam Bennett, Bald Mustache Man fan club are here to talk about the team's recent performance. And oh boy, we've had a beautiful slate of games over the last couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the last four games we've played, we've at least gotten at least 1 point. We've won three of our last four. Sam Bennett, I think, now has 4 points since he's in his last two games. Duclair's been on a six-game point streak. Huberto's starting to pick it up a bit more. Goaltending's starting to play well. And this team just looks like they're finally making that push to be a true playoff contender.
Yeah, definitely. And the most telling thing with Sam Bennett I want to start with is he's been a Panther for two games, and he's already out there dropping the gloves for his teammates. Like, you saw that hit on Anthony Duclair, and then he immediately goes out there and runs at the guy and drops the gloves and throws down. Like, he's been here for years. He's just fit in like peanut butter and jelly, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, like I talked about last episode with how they brought in Hornqvist and Gudas, he brings in, I feel like, something this team has been missing, and that's been toughness. I also feel like he's starting to become one of those players that starts to play for one another. If someone takes out my boy, I'm coming after you. So that's something that's been missing from the squad. And on top of that, despite what all these analytics say, which I have nothing against those stats, not trying to start a fight or anything, he's proving that wrong. I think he was just with a bad Calgary team. And he's flourished since he's been here, and I cannot wait until his next game, which, thank God, is tomorrow.
Yeah, he's been playing alongside Jonathan Huberto now, and he has 3 points in his two games, including a goal tonight.
Four, actually.
He had an assist on one of the goals?
No, he didn't. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
So it would be three. Yeah, he didn't have an assist on any of the goals today, so he had four. He was just an assist shot at the Gordie Howe hat trick today. But, yeah, he has 3 points in his four games as a Panther. He's fit in seamlessly. He's in front of the net when they need him to. He's able to get those pucks home. And playing on a line with a guy like Huberto who can get him the puck in those areas, he's become extremely effective.
Yeah, on top of that, he still also brings that physical presence. So I've seen him go out there and lay out a bunch of hits. I've seen him, like, be hard on the forecheck. He's very good at regaining possession and even setting up his men on the point, whether it be Huberto or Duclair or one of his defensive partners. He's been vital to this team. And honestly, it's telling me more and more that those two second-round picks were not really an overpayment at all, contrary to what some people believe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's been such a good fit for the Panthers. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, those two picks probably won't amount to too much. And if anything, they wouldn't really make an impact on the roster in the next couple of years when the Panthers team's looking to go deep now. And adding a piece like that just makes the team all the more dangerous. And they address the need that they, like, were desperately needing to fill. Yeah, I think Bill Zito just knew what he needed when he came into the deadline and found those perfect pieces to get what the team needs rather than splurging on a guy like Taylor Hall or Kyle Palmieri or any of these other big names that were floating around. He just got the guys that fit his style of team that he wanted to build.
Right, and this is I'm currently writing an article on this right now. I believe that Bill Zito should be not just a candidate, but I mean, they should give him General Manager of the Year tomorrow. What he has done to this Panthers team is nothing short of remarkable. He's completely changed the culture. He's bringing in these guys who have playoff experience, and they can not only just that, they play very, very well. And on top of that, he's making deals that didn't even seem possible. I didn't think we were ever going to get out of Mike Matheson's contract, let alone get something big out of it. I didn't see us getting rid of Brett Connolly's deal. And like I said before, we still got something out of it. Like I said before, what he has done for this team is incredible, and he should be a shoe-in for General Manager of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. He's been such a good... every move he's made has basically turned into gold at this point. Like, Hornquist was an immediate good fit. Verhaeghe, Duclair, even Gudas has looked pretty good. He's been scrappy. He scored a goal tonight, too.
He has two goals in his last three games. I think he's heating up, Colby.
Yeah. I've got Gudas the sniper out here. Let's see if he gets another one tomorrow. But you got a sniper on the loose. We got so much going for the Panthers. So it might turn out fairly well.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said before, I feel like Zito has that mindset that he wants to win now. He doesn't want to build for the future. But at the same time, I feel like he's kind of doing both in a sense. Because it's obvious he wants to start bringing in some of these guys and start bringing in some of the prospects he likes. But at the same time, he doesn't want that to take away from the goal. And he doesn't want this as a throwaway year. And with the way this team has been playing, it's clearly obvious they don't want to wait for another few years. They don't want to rebuild. They want to win now.
Yeah, and, like, you have a nice core of young guys who can play at a high level. So, like, you got a team that can compete not only this year, but, like, a few years down the line as well. And they're, like, supplementing all these amazing pieces they have with, like, Barkov and Huberto or Ekblad with these other guys who are fairly young and can stick with that core. And then you have a group of prospects like Grigory Denisenko, Owen Tippett, Anton Lundell, who could come up and supplement them for even longer. So you have a very long shelf life on this team, and this team can compete for such a long time.
Right. And this is also makes me happy, and we have some sort of backup plan, because as everyone knows, next year is the expansion draft, and I don't know who we're going to be keeping. I don't know who we're going to be losing. I think Drieger's out of here. That's for certain. But I also don't, even with free agency coming around, I don't know who stays. I don't see, as much as I want to hope he stays, I think Duclair is going to want a bigger contract, which there's nothing wrong with. But I don't know if Bill Zito is willing to overspend. And that's just what I've noticed about Zito. He's not really going out and signing people to like $7, $8 million deals with no movement clauses. He's getting for people for cheap. He's getting people for team-friendly deals, and he's not, you know, putting all his eggs in one basket. So if we were to lose a lot of big stars, whether it be Verhaeghe or Duclair, I feel like he has options to work with in just his development stage.
Yeah, like you have so many young guys who can come through the pipeline and help supplement these guys you might lose to free agency or the expansion draft to the point where there's like endless possibilities with this roster that Zito could work with, and he could find other guys who could take those team friendly deals and turn them into those types of players. Because I mean, we've seen it happen so often, even in the past with some Panthers players like Jonathan Marchessault, who I mean, he wasn't a Zito guy, he was a Talon guy, but you find these guys who you can turn them into something great. So I don't have any doubts that even if these guys walk, you can either stick with one of these younger guys or you can take another guy off the market for fairly cheap and get some good production out of him. Because he it's like he's playing money ball in this sense. Like he's finding guys that fit the culture and fit the type of play style he wants and getting a lot more out of him than he paid for.
Right, and since we were speaking about the pipeline, Coach Joel Quenneville mentioned that tomorrow there is a good chance we might finally see Spencer Knight in a Panther uniform, and finally, after a few years of college and all this hype around him ever since he was drafted, might finally play an NHL game. And I'm going to be honest, I'm really excited to see what he can do, because if he goes out there and he starts balling out, as much as I'm going to miss him, I won't be too worried about losing Drieger to the expansion draft or some other way.
Yeah, exactly. Like we've seen what this guy can do, like on the national team level with Team USA when he was absolutely lights out during the World Junior Championship. He had such a great year with Boston College this year. He looks all the bit ready for the NHL, and I don't see any reason why the Panthers shouldn't start him tomorrow. And I'm definitely excited for this too, because I mean, I met the guy during one of the Panthers rookie camps, and he's definitely a good guy. He definitely seems down to earth and ready to play at the NHL level. I got to ask him a few questions about that a few years ago during prospect camp, but it seems like this guy's ready.
Yeah, and like I said before, a lot of these prospects analysts have been saying he's going to be the next Carey Price, and they're saying he's going to be the next top goaltender of all time. I'm really hoping he lives to that hype, because from what I've seen in Boston College, like you said before, and from what I've seen in the World Juniors, he has been nothing short of incredible. And yeah, like I said before, I can't wait till he puts on the pads and starts doing it at an NHL level.
Yeah, he's proven, and everywhere that he's been, that he is capable of playing at such a high level at every stage he goes to the point where it just seems like now is a great time to give him the opportunity to show what he has at the NHL level. Like, he's proven it for Team USA, he proved it at college, and it's just the perfect time to give him a chance.
Especially I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, especially against a bad Columbus team too. Like, you get to give him a test at the NHL level without it being such a big test like a Tampa or a Carolina. You just give him a shot at a night where both your goalies have had action recently, but also to give them an opportunity to rest and give him a shot against a team that isn't necessarily as good as the rest of the division.
Right. And I was going to ask you a question. If he goes in there and balls out tomorrow, do you think we see him start suiting up for playoff games, or do you think it's too soon?
It depends on what happens during the playoffs, obviously. Like, I think they'll start out with Bobrovsky as the first goaltender for the playoffs. I think you see Driedger in there before you see Knight, but it ultimately depends on what he does, if he does start tomorrow, and if he does start games after that. It just depends on if it's enough. Like, I think the same scenario is popping up on Long Island with the Islanders, with Ilya Sorokin earning more starts and proving himself even more. So if that happens with Sorokin, I don't doubt that it could happen with Mr. Spencer Knight too.
Well, also, it's not even just over where in Long Island. It's also, you just go to North Carolina, and there's also been a big goalie controversy. If you don't see James Reimer playing as much, you see Alex Nedeljkovic coming in and start playing lights out on most nights. So that situation that I just mentioned isn't too far-fetched.
It's on Long Island, by the way, not in Long Island.
You know what I mean. I'm not from that part of New York, okay?
Okay. But anyways, yeah, Nedeljkovic. He's been lights out too. He's been one of the better goaltenders in the league. So I think you can see him possibly starting over Reimer and Mrazek. That was such a tongue twister.
Yeah, but if it makes you feel better, man. When I first saw that name, I'm like, how in God's name?
Yeah, that just wasn't happening for me for whatever reason. But anyways, he's been such a good goal. He's been like in the top half in the league in save percentage, goals against average, all those stats you'd want to see your goaltender do great in. So you see him dominate the league like that, and it's just it's just a sign that you might want to give Spencer Knight a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you looked at some past cup winners, you've seen a trend in rookie goaltenders coming in and winning and helping them win the cup. Look at Jordan Binnington. Look at Matt Murray before he started regressing. It's there's definitely a trend in that. I don't know if Spencer Knight will come in and start doing just that, but you know, it's the idea isn't too out there.
Yeah, like I could see him being a Andre Vasilevsky type, like to bring up Vasilevsky's numbers when he was a 20-year-old. He in his first season in the NHL at the ripe age of 20, which Spencer Knight just turned today as we're recording this, by the way. We're releasing this on Tuesday, but as of the time we're recording this, it is Spencer Knight's birthday. So happy birthday to the guy. But Vasilevsky, in 16 games as a 20-year-old, recorded a 7-5-1 record, a .918 save percentage, and a 2.36 goals against average. That's pretty good, and I think that is reasonable to possibly see from Spencer Knight if the Cards go well.
Yeah, absolutely, and I also feel like he had that veteran presence with Ben Bishop in at the time. And I feel like he's going to get that from Bobrovsky, and not even just so much that. They have that whole goaltending department with people like Rob Talisman and Roberto Luongo. He's going to get a lot of lessons from those people, and I think that's going to drive him even further to the point where I'm pretty sure when Bobrovsky's contract is up, I think Spencer Knight takes over as a starter.
I think Spencer Knight could even take over before that contract ends, if we're being honest here. Like, if he progresses the way we expect him to, I mean, he probably could take over that starting job fairly soon. It just depends on Bobrovsky's production, because he's been kind of iffy as of late.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can go.
I mean, yeah, but I think in his last couple games, he actually stood pretty tall. He gave up a few iffy ones here and there, but I think as we're going towards the stretch of the playoffs, he has improved his play a lot as of recent. I don't know if that means he's going to start in the postseason or not, but you know what? He's absolutely turned the ship around. I don't know if he's going to, like I said before, I don't know how long he's going to keep it for, but I wouldn't start talking about replacing Bobrovsky just yet. And even then, we're still paying him, what, $10 million a year now?
Yeah, $10 million a year for the next 6 years. That was such a wonderful contract.
Yeah, oh my God. But I think just with that alone, I don't see them running Spencer Knight too much, unless Spencer Knight just plays absolutely out of his mind. I mean, just comes in and like gets like a shutout like in his first night. Very similar to what Driedger did in his first NHL start.
Yeah, like if he makes waves during his first start, and possibly, it's like I could see this happening more next season than this season, but during that Bobrovsky contract, I predict that Spencer Knight takes over the job. I mean, it's not that unreasonable to predict this guy to become one of the better goaltenders in the league over the next 6 years. I mean, that's a long time for him to develop. And I mean, somewhere between like year three and year five, I could see it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if he hits his prime early, just think about it this way. He's going to be in that prime for a very, very long time. Look at some of the goaltenders throughout history that have just, once they hit that point in their careers, they just take off. Luongo, Belfour, Brodeur, even some goaltenders are still playing today with Hellebuck and Rene and even Carey Price, even though he's been on a slump recently. Once they start hitting that, you're pretty much set for at least a decade before you have to start thinking, we need a new goalie.
Yeah, so Spencer Knight's going to be around for a long time. I mean, the kid's only 20. And, I mean, if he does play his first NHL game tomorrow, that you have a good 10 to 20 years with this guy, depending on how his development goes. I mean, Marty Brodeur played into his 40s. So, I mean, you have a kid starting this early. Like, you have him around for a very long time.
And also, of course, God willing, it also as we're hoping he also doesn't, you know, suffer any injury back things. Yeah. Any injury issues, because as we all know, Florida's been getting hit with a really bad injury bug as of late. We did get a scare with Duclair tonight as of the recording of this. Weegar did not play today's game because he was out with a day-to-day injury. Achari's not in the lineup for a few days. And, of course, we're missing Verhage, and we unfortunately already know about Aaron Ekblad. But I don't – unless he doesn't – as long as he doesn't face any major hiccups when it comes to injuries, which I don't see happening because you don't hear about goaltending injuries too much these days unless it's something really serious. I think we have someone who could play well into their 40s and still manage to be a shining star.
Yeah, like probably one of the only cases of injuries derailing a goaltender's career I could really think of is
Rick DiPietro.
Yes. You took the words right from my mouth. My noted favorite player as a child, Rick DiPietro, only name I could think of in that department, unless you have another name. But, I mean, it's just an unfortunate case there. But when it comes to goaltenders recently, there hasn't really been that problem.
Yeah, the only other goaltender I can really think about has been Ben Bishop. He's unfortunately just suffered injuries, not even during his time in Dallas, but even back then during his time in Tampa. He's always carried that with him. And it sucks because you know what? He can play out of his mind when he's on a roll. I've seen him in his time in Tampa. I've seen him in his time in Dallas. He's a damn good goaltender, and I hate to see anything like that happen to anyone.
Yeah, he's been missing for the entire season, and it's been hampering Dallas very hard. Like, they were set to be one of the heavy hitters in that division with the Panthers in the Central Division, but with Bishop gone for the season, they've been having to roll out Khudobin and Ottinger, and while they both haven't been that bad, Bishop could have made that team all the more better.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is no discredit to Khudobin. The way he plays, oh my lord, you would think he's been in the league for... No, he has been in the league for a long time. Hold on. You would think he's a Vezina Trophy winner or something, but, you know, I just... It sucks because I think Dallas just got dealt a really bad hand. They got hit with the COVID bug early. They're getting hit with bad injuries. Not even just goaltenders. You got Radulov down. I think Sagan's been missing some time as well. And then they have a lot of notable players, which I unfortunately can't remember off the top of my head, so I apologize.
Yeah, Sagan hasn't played a game this season.
He hasn't played? Oh, God. You can't help but feel bad for him. So I think when the season gets back to a normal, we go back to our realigned divisions and all that jazz, I think you'll start seeing them come out of the West and start being one of those strong teams once again. They just have to get focus on getting healthy, but... I mean, they're actually not too far out of the playoff picture just yet, but I think if they do manage to sneak in, I don't know how deep they can really go.
Yeah, like, once you get healthy again, and I think a longer offseason for them will work wonders as far as getting these guys back and not having to go far in the playoffs like they did last year, because they lost Bishop during the playoffs, they lost Sagan during the playoffs, during that run to the Stanley Cup Final. So I think a pretty long offseason this year where they get to rest and recover, I think will do wonders for them, and they'll come back swinging next season.
Absolutely. And speaking of the Central Division, it's been heating up as of late. Like we talked about earlier, Florida has points in their last four games. As of now, there is a tie for first place with Florida and Carolina. Carolina currently owns the tiebreaker. Later this week, Florida plays Carolina on Thursday and Saturday night, and Nashville's starting to finally emerge after being what seemed like dead in the water earlier in the year. They're starting to emerge as a potential playoff contender. They're fourth in the division, and I believe they just won their game, or is that still going on?
Yeah, Nashville won 5-2 today.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to submit, and that's the team that was chasing them. So I think you're going to see a really tight race for that last spot.
Anyways, Nashville currently sits in the 4 seed with 51 points. Dallas is actually climbing up the ladder here. They're in the 5 seed with 48 points, and they have 3 games in hand on Nashville. Chicago has 1 game in hand on Nashville, and they're at 47. So, yeah, the race is heating up. And, yeah, as of right now, the Columbus has fallen below Detroit.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, Columbus has fallen below Detroit.
Oh, my God.
Detroit has a 16-24-7 record with 39 points. And the Blue Jackets have a 15-23-9 record with 39 points. But the Blue Jackets are behind the Red Wings.
Because of a tiebreaker, I'm assuming?
Yeah, because they have less wins.
Gotcha. Yeah, wow, how the mighty have fallen. I don't know what it is over there. I mean, they've also been suffering injuries too, but I just don't know what it is over there. I think Tortorella that team is just not well built. I think Tortorella with Tortorella, like I said before, they need to just, you know, cut their loss with him and cut him. I think they just need to go in and just start rebuilding from scratch because clearly nothing's working out. The Line A trade isn't working out. Max Domi isn't working out. He was scratched tonight because he was having emotional issues as far as I remember, or at least as well as what I read on Twitter. That team is just a disaster. And it sucked because not so long ago we were thinking, you know what, this team might be a legitimate playoff and maybe even Stanley Cup contender after what they did to Tampa Bay a few years back. And you look now, Tampa Bay has a Stanley Cup and Columbus is nearly at the bottom of a division. Or at the bottom now, but I'll be honest, I don't see them finishing at the bottom. I think they can probably scrape by with a couple more wins. I don't know if they win tomorrow, but I can see them, you know, grabbing another win or two.
Yeah, like, I think that it could possibly be that the Red Wings finish above the Blue Jackets, especially with all the dysfunction going on there. And now you have all these random names out there, like the guy who, I don't even remember the guy's name, who hit Duclair, like Bjornfort or something. I don't even know.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name either.
Yeah, like exactly. That's the situation going on in Columbus to the point where it's just a bunch of randoms, and I think everyone's kind of checked out. Like Domi seems like he's checked out. Line A seems like he's checked out, and I think it's time for a change there. Like Tortorella is a good coach, and he's had success. Well, I mean, once his like style of coaching kind of wears on players, it kind of just gets to them mentally, and that's where Columbus kind of hit the wall, especially because now with a lot of their talented players leaving, like Dubois leaving, they've had Panarin leave, they had Duchesne leave, they had Bobrovsky leave, and that's kind of led them into this little hole they're in now.
And not even just them. This season, they trade away Nick Foligno, David Savard. I feel like that's the direction the team is heading towards. I think they're going to hit the reset button, start from scratch, build their way through the draft, and maybe build around the young piece they have, because they still have Seth Jones, and he's still phenomenally well-talented defenseman, and they even have a great two-way forward, in Cam Atkinson. So I think those are the two players they're going to look at, and they're going to try to build around.
I mean, I think even those guys could be moved because they're not that young. I don't think they're spring chickens anymore by any means. I mean, especially Atkinson. Let me just double check his age. Cam Atkinson. I have to put his first name there because he's not like Tom Brady. Yeah, Cam Atkinson is 31 years old. He is not a spring chicken. So I think he could easily get moved. Seth Jones, I think, is like maybe 26, 27 years old. So, I mean, Jones you might hold on to, but Atkinson's one of those guys I can see leaving. Like, Line A could probably be out the door, but he's still a little bit young, too, so you might want to keep him. It just depends.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I think that's looking somewhat decent is their goaltending department. Elvis Merzlikins, he did struggle tonight, but Elvis Merzlikins, every time I hear his name, he plays out of his mind.
I don't even think he was that bad tonight. He like kind of stood on his head for a little bit, and he made some pretty big saves, but the Panthers were just applying so much pressure on Merz Lincolns that there was only so much he could do. But at times during this game, he looked great, and I don't think the loss was Merz Lincolns' fault at all. I think the Panthers were just the better team, and they found a way to pop four goals on this guy. But towards the beginning of the game, Merz Lincolns was the one keeping Columbus in it until they kind of broke open a little bit. But if you look at the beginning of the game, especially towards the end of that first period when the Panthers had a slur of just beautiful chances on him, he made some beautiful saves. So it wasn't like it was Merz Lincolns' fault at all. Like, he played great.
No, and no Blue Jackets fan should not. This is just from my perspective. I don't know. I'm not a Blue Jackets guy. I don't know that much about the team. But tonight, no one should be blaming that loss on Merz Lincolns. Because I think if they go for the reset button, they need to do everything in their power to keep that kid. He's young. He's very talented. And he could probably be one of the next, like, big-name goaltenders in the NHL when we start losing the Pecorines, when we start losing the Carey Prices and all the other big names when they finally start hitting the decline.
Yeah, and like even Korpisalo's not that old either at 26. So you have a goaltending tandem of Korpisalo, who is 26, and Merz Lincolns, who is like 27. Yeah, Merz Lincolns is 27. So they're both on the younger side as far as goaltenders go, because typically they kind of break out around their age 24, 25 season, maybe 25, 26 season. So you have these guys who are fairly young and can stick around for a little bit. And like the shelf life of a goaltender, I would say, is usually from their 26, 27 season until like their 35, 36 season. Or maybe guys like Luongo in Brodeur's case, they can go up till like 39, 40. But you have these guys who could stick around for maybe 11 or 12 more years, and you get those years out of them. So the goaltending department's looking fairly good for Columbus. But, I mean, Spencer Knight's also a rare case, circling back to Pantherland, that he's coming up at 20. So you get a good, like, almost two decades out of him if you play your cards right there.
Yeah, it's also going to matter hugely based on how they develop him on top of that. Because a lot of Panther fans know that our development hasn't been the best. You know, we don't have a good coach down in the AHL, at least from what I remember. I haven't really been keeping up too much because I know we switched affiliates and then they dropped out of the season. So now we're with someone completely different in Syracuse. But it all, like I said before, it all really depends on how that development goes. It all depends what lessons he picks up and how well he plays. And also depends on how well his confidence hits. Because if he takes a bad loss and his confidence gets shot, you got to find a way to pick it up. But I don't see him hitting any. Eventually, he's going to hit a slump. But if he finds a way to bounce back from it, I think you have a real star on your hands.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it's smart, too, that they chose to, circling back to the Panthers again, they chose to keep him on the NHL roster rather than sending him to Syracuse, just so he's with the Panthers staff rather than, it looks like, Tampa Bay's. And he has consistency there. He's working with Luongo. He's working with Talis and the whole goaltending success department that they had. So I think they really put that in place just because they have a guy like Spencer Knight who could soak up as much as he can from all those names. And to add on top of that, you have a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky that he can learn behind. So I think if he's in a situation like that, he could be around for a long time. As for Columbus, I'm not sure what their coaching staff's going to look like past this year. So I think you want to have some type of coaching staff, a lot of guys who can groom all some of the younger players to keep being fairly good and develop them, because development is very important.
Right, and hopefully he learns a lot of lessons, not even just from the development, but he's also going to be working with Joel Quenneville, who is who's been fantastic, and he's worked with some pretty well-known goalies who's throughout his time. He's worked with Corey Crawford, and it resulted in a couple Stanley Cups. So I think if he gives him that extra shove, like we said before, in his development, he's going to flourish into hopefully a great player.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have a goaltender who's young and has a lot of potential and has already shown a lot during his long tenure there, that he could be such an integral part of the team, and you have such a amazing part of that cast being developed by all these guys who know what they're doing, have been to cup finals like Quenneville and won. You have Luongo, who's been one of the better goaltenders in the league in his prime. You just have such a great cast of characters to try to develop him.
Right. And yeah, like we said before, I don't see him faltering too much at the NHL level. He's played with a lot of up and coming stars. He's played against tough battles, like even in World Juniors. So what happens to him should be nothing short of greatness, and I don't see him faltering anytime soon. It all depends on how well he plays, and like I said, like we talked about before, hopefully he gets his first start and we finally get a look at the kid.
Yeah, exactly. And let's also just transition into some, like, in the past, we've had some other goaltenders come through, like, example, Jacob Markstrom, who came through. He looked kind of decent with us. He was hit or miss, and then he got moved for Luongo. That was kind of, I mean, what do you think about that trade overall? Because, I mean, I'm working on a story about this, about players who've moved on. So I just want to hear your perspective on the Markstrom for Luongo trade.
I think Markstrom had a lot of potential, but it was obvious he wasn't doing well here. He just wasn't looking too hot. And obviously in the past, our development has just not been good at all. So I think they went ahead and did the right move by taking back Luongo, because obviously it did turn to some success. 2 years later, they end up going on a playoff run with him, and he still stays with the team for a good amount of years, and he retires as a Panther, and he is still part of the organization and still has a very big, important piece. So in the long run, they're still using him as much as they can. And as of right now, Vancouver no longer has Jacob Markstrom, and he's currently playing with Calgary. And, well, Vancouver got hit with something with a bad COVID case, but they managed to turn around, and it looks like they're finally doing well. Maybe a little too late, but I think overall Florida ended up winning that trade. But that doesn't mean it didn't work out for both parties. I think for the time being, it did work out. It seemed like it worked out better for Florida than it did Vancouver.
I think in Vancouver's case, Markstrom kind of did develop into something great. He took them to the playoffs last year and was pretty good the year before. But I think the whole decision with Markstrom in Vancouver was just them picking Holtby over him. And then you have a guy like Demko, to where Markstrom was expendable, and now he looks pretty decent in Calgary. I mean, Calgary hasn't really done that good this season for him, but as far as his individual stats, he's still pretty good, and he's on a team-friendly contract. So, I mean, looking at the Panthers side of this, I mean, they could have avoided signing Bobrovsky for that huge bloated contract. But again, having Markstrom and losing out on the years with Luongo, it's kind of a wash, and it seems pretty even.
Yeah, and like I said before, I mean, with Bobrovsky, I think when Dale Talon took a chance on him, they were trying to get Bobrovsky as advertised, and I think Talon was just kind of scrambling to find someone to pick up the pieces, because you had Luongo retiring, or I think they signed him before he officially announced. But they brought him in. Luongo ended up, you know, retiring and all that jazz. So they needed someone to take the helm at starter. So if we could turn back the clocks and prevent the Markstrom trade, I agree. I probably would have done it. Or actually, no, I wouldn't have done it, because like I said before, we got Luongo's longevity, and now we have him in this goaltending success group, which I don't know what the proper term is, and for that I apologize. But I think Markstrom, like I said, he developed better when he went to Vancouver, and I think he just needed a change of scenery like most players do when they're struggling, and he got what he wanted, and clearly he's flourishing. It sucks that Vancouver ended up just dealing away because of Holtby, but if Calgary can find a way to turn things around after yet another bad season, he might finally be goaltender number one over there, and might finally mean something for the Flames.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this season's kind of been a wash for Calgary, but if they make some good moves this offseason, they still have Markstrom on that team-friendly deal, and I mean, he could be a fairly good force for Calgary for years to come. So I feel like he's found himself a good position. I mean, the Flames still have Gaudreau, Monahan, and Hanifin, so they have a good foundation there to build a contending team. So it's just about how they do with it. But on to a different topic I wanted to touch on. Today, Patrick Marleau became the NHL's leader in games played. He passed Gordie Howe in all times games played. So how do you feel about that?
I think that's just an absolutely historical accomplishment. I never saw anyone breaking that record anytime soon. And on top of that, I think Gordie Howe played until he was 52. And how old is Patrick Marleau now? Is he in his 40s or is he in his late 30s?
Let me do a quick Google search on this.
Yeah, despite that, what Patrick Marleau has come to the league and shown he can absolutely play. He's a widely respected player. He's talented. He, in my opinion, he should have a cup, but unfortunately he doesn't. But, you know, I'm nothing but happy for that guy. And hopefully he keeps that record for a very, very long time. And I like to see him play a bit more and more, but, you know, everyone unfortunately has an expiration date. But what Patrick Marleau has done in the NHL, not even just for the Sharks, but for the game as a whole, is nothing short of incredible. And it's an absolutely incredible accomplishment. And every single player, young or old, should look up Patrick Marleau and try to be like him.
Yeah, and just to clear things up, he is 41 years of age, and he was drafted second overall in 1997. And for context, that is 4 years before I was born.
Oh, jeez. That was a year after I was born. Way to make me feel old.
Yeah. So Marlowe's been in the league since before I was born, and I mean, since you were a baby, he's been in the league our entire life. And I mean, his longevity is just something to marvel at. And he's been able to stick around, be a valuable asset to some teams, and guide some young players around. And now he's back in San Jose where it started. And it's just fitting for Marleau to be on that team on San Jose when he's breaking this record. Because, I mean, he's had so many great moments as a Shark.
Yeah, and I think what's even crazier is you said 41, right?
Yeah, he's 41.
Yeah, and when Gordie Howe played his last game, he was 52. So he, not only is he breaking that record, he's doing it 11 years before Howe finished his last game as an NHL player. So, granted, I don't think you're ever going to see anytime soon anyone playing into their 50s, but at the fact of the matter is he still managed to break it despite being, you know, still, according to us, still relatively young compared to Howe when he finished his last game.
Yeah, they were 11 years younger, so that's crazy. He's managed to stick around for that long. He's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer when you look at the numbers. I mean, in 1,767 games, he's managed 566 goals. He's almost eclipsing the 1,200 point mark. He's at 1,196. So those are Hall of Fame numbers right there. I mean, he might not be point per game I mean, he's kind of fallen off recently in the point department, but I mean, as far as just looking at his impact as a San Jose Shark and what he's been able to do, it's just crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know if he plays another year. I mean, could you see him playing another year after this? Because I'm going to be completely honest, I don't know if he plays another season after this. But if he does, I hope he does hit that mark and plays, you know, maybe a full 82-game season. But I definitely see him going into Hall of Fame, and I'm pretty sure by next year or even the year after, they're probably going to try to retire his number into the rafters over at SAP Center.
Yeah, like immediately after he retires, they're going to retire his number alongside Jumbo Joe Thornton for sure. Those Shark teams were, I mean, growing up in that era, being a kid around that time, I really loved watching those Sharks teams when I was a kid. I mean, I was growing up like 6 or 7 years old. I mean, I liked putting the Sharks games on as I thought Sharks were cool. So that was my rationale for watching the team. But just growing up watching them play in cool Shark logo.
Let's be real here, Colby. What kid didn't think Sharks were cool? Come on.
Yeah, what kid didn't think Sharks were cool? I mean, that was a fairly obvious thing for kids, but you got the cool Shark logo, and you got Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton kind of just hanging out there, and like that's the perfect recipe for a little kid's second favorite team, just to be honest. Like, and I was a season ticket holder back for the New York Islanders when I was a little kid growing up on Long Island. So I mean, watching these guys play when they came to the Coliseum was just crazy for me. I was like, oh, yeah, there's the team with the cool Shark logo. And then you go and see Patty Marleau and Joe Thornton light it up. It was, like, one of the coolest things of that era. And now to see him, like, 10, 15 years later after that, be one of the most the legendary players in the game and passing that games played mark is just crazy.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said before, every single person, young or old, should look up to Patrick Marleau in some sort of way. Yes, he doesn't have a cup. Yes, he doesn't. I don't know if he has any MVP accolades. I could be dead wrong. I don't have it on hand with me, and for that, I apologize. I don't want any Sharks fans to be, like, really mad at me. But every single person, young or old, who watches hockey should look back and realize just how good Patrick Marleau is and understand that that is just a massive accomplishment. I don't think you'll see that record broken anytime soon, unless it's someone that comes up and has little to no injury history or is a plug-in every single night. And even then, I'm not so sure if they're going to break it.
Yeah, I have his – I mean, he was just a three-time All-Star. And then he, I don't think there's too many awards here. I'm looking at his page. I mean, he kind of flew under the radar a lot. And I mean, he is, but I mean, just for context, he's second all time in goals from an active player, 23rd all time just out of everyone, and then he's fourth in points out of all active players, and he's 50th in just every out of everyone, and that to me is just crazy. But just one of his more underrated seasons was when he put up 86 points in 2005-2006. But other than that, he kind of just flown under the radar as a second option in San Jose to Joe Thornton. So he hasn't really had that many accolades, but he's just stuck around for so long and had a lot of pretty good seasons to where you got to look at him for a Hall of Fame case, even without some of those like other accolades.
Well, even then, he's still, you know, top 50 in some of these leaderboards. And you said it yourself, he's also, even in active players, he still has a lot of points. And like we're talking about before, he broke one of the most historic records in all of hockey. I think just that alone should get him some sort of accolade in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly.
Despite the fact he doesn't have a cup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he doesn't have a cup. He doesn't have a Hart Trophy or much of anything in the trophy case, but at the same time, this guy has just accomplished so much in his career as far as scoring. He's one of the most celebrated players in San Jose Sharks history, and he's just been that good.
Yeah, and if we go by that logic, that's like saying, you know, Lundqvist wasn't a good goaltender. I know you're not too crazy about him being the Islanders fan you are, but Lundqvist, you know, he doesn't have a cup under his belt, even though, like I said before, with Marlowe, he doesn't deserve one. Or let me rephrase it. He does deserve one. But, you know, if we went by simply who won a cup and who didn't, it'd be kind of unfair. So Marlowe absolutely should be a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame whenever he's eligible.
Lundqvist does have a Vezina trophy under his belt, so he does have something in the trophy case. So that does make his case a little bit better, but at the same time, Marlowe does have more longevity over Lundqvist at this point. But they're both probably Hall of Famers. And I mean, if Lundqvist's career is over after the heart thing, that's pretty sad to see it go that way. But I mean, at the same time, it's also like, at least you never get to see him in any other uniform other than a Ranger jersey. But it's unfortunate for him that it had to end that way, especially after he got a new start that he thought he was going to have with Washington, and then that issue came up.
Yeah, you hate to see anyone go through anyone like that, especially with someone who played with a lot of heart in Henrik Lundqvist.
Was the pun intended there?
Oh, are you even thinking that? Oh my god. I gotta watch my words, man. I'm sorry.
Man, we really, I'm sorry, Henrik. We did you dirty there.
Oh my god, I'm gonna get reamed in my mentions.
I mean, there's no better way to end the podcast today than disrespecting an NHL legend with a pun. So I think we can call that there for today. But we have another exciting week of Panther hockey coming up. They got the Blue Jackets tomorrow, and then they have the Hurricanes on Thursday, going into another weekend set in Nashville starting Monday and Tuesday of next week.
Which, so, I'll be in attendance for if anyone wants to come and bug me.
You're going to be in Nashville?
I'm going to be in Nashville for those two nights, so hopefully we get at least one of those wins. Otherwise, I spent all this money for nothing.
Yeah, so it's the home stretch coming up here. There's
11 games?
There's like 10 games left in the season, I think. So we're reaching the home stretch for sure, and it should be exciting to see how things turn out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and just the way they've been playing even just recently, I feel like this team is going to really going to push hard to the finish. I don't know if they're going to rest anyone right now, and I think that's part of the reason why you're not seeing Achari or Uyghur right now, and same thing with Driedger. But it should be really interesting to see what Q and what the team does over the course of the next 2 weeks right before playoffs.
All right. Thanks. It's been nice talking with you today, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Take care of yourselves, guys, and you guys have a good night. Go Cats.
All right. Take care, guys.